Il-program li ser tisimaw u għamiġi upli l-kombixu għatajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today on University Matters two academics in the area of linguistics, Dr. Manuel Padilla Cruz and Dr. Stavros Asimakopoulos. Just a brief word about my two guests. Dr. Padilla Cruz is currently Associate Professor at the Department of English Language at the University of Seville. He holds a PhD in English linguistics from that same university. His research interests and publications deal with cognitive, social, historical, interlanguage, and cross-cultural pragmatics. As a member of the research group Intercultural Studies, that's English and Spanish, Pragmatic and Discourse Issues, he has co-edited Current Trends in Intercultural Cognitive and Social Pragmatics, Studies in Intercultural Cognitive and Social Pragmatics, and that was in 2007, and Pragmatics Applied to Language Teaching and Learning in 2009. And he has a co-edited publication in print at the moment entitled Impoliteness and Interpersonal Communications. Dr. Asimakopoulos is a senior lecturer at the Institute of Linguistics. He gained his PhD from Edinburgh University. At the moment, he's also additionally affiliated with the Department of Philosophy I at the University of Granada as a member of a project funded by the Spanish Ministry of Science and Innovation. His research lies in the interface of linguistics, philosophy, and cognitive psychology, and focuses on the implications that cognitive approaches to inferential pragmatics carry for the study of linguistic meaning. He also has investigated topics such as lexical, conceptual semantics, figurative language, drama translation, and logical constants. I know there are quite a few long words there, but I'm sure that we'll sort it out as the chat goes on. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for the invitation.
I think it would be safe to say that linguistics is, for most people, quite a difficult subject to get their heads around. Personally, I always shied away from it until I was pushed into taking a closer look at the subject when I was researching for my master's dissertation. I must say it opened up a very beautiful world, and although I only looked at things in a rather superficial way, I certainly started to appreciate more the value of the subject and the relevance of the subject to our everyday life. Perhaps, Dr. Asimakopoulos, you could give us a bit of a definition of linguistics and also perhaps a bit of a whistle-stop tour of the areas, of which there are many, of course, the different areas of linguistic study.
Well, first of all, you can call me Stavros. I don't feel like a Dr. Asimakopoulos yet. You're absolutely right. There is a very big misconception about what linguistics is about, and most people I've spoken to, some even now believe that you know, when you're studying linguistics, you're just doing languages and you know how, you know, every language works or all European languages work or something like that. And this is a common misconception you always get. If you want a definition, I would say that, you know, linguistics is essentially the scientific study of language, but that doesn't say anything in itself. I guess that you could say that linguistics is essentially dealing with what does it mean for me or anyone to say that they know a language as a native language or even as a second language, I would guess, and essentially how they put to use this knowledge. And this is something that Chomsky has said like years and years ago. then the thing is that things have evolved in many different directions ever since. And essentially, even though theoretical linguistics deals with syntax, semantics, phonology, you know, things like that. So you have how you put words together in order to make strings that you know, have meaning and all that stuff. And then semantics is the study of the meaning of words and eventually sentences or big parts of speech. And phonology has to do with sound. Basically. But the crucial component in these main areas of linguistics, well, some people might not agree that these are the main ones, but again, would be that you need to come up with some sort of systematic way of dealing with them. And essentially, anyone who studied linguistics seriously or, you know, has had a look at it, you can see that there are a lot of the patterns that are used across languages, not even just in one. So even if, you know, I know that most Maltese people think that their language is totally different than anything else spoken in Europe, but still there are patterns which are common with European language, in as much there are patterns that are common with the Arabic one. So apart from these core areas, as I would call them, you have many, I mean, the basic rationale for why you feel as well that linguistics is so important is that essentially language is one of the few areas, of the few competencies we have as humans that we can actually observe explicitly, and we can get some input about how our mind works. Because I mean, we know that when we see people, we now have developed machinery to examine vision, but you know, it's language can give us even more direct evidence towards how our mental mechanism works in general. Then, of course, but with the years, there have been many applications within the field, and many, I mean, the field has grown into a huge area with many subfields as well. So I would just mention a few without meaning, you know, that these are the main ones. But you have the area of psycholinguistics, which is really important these days, because you actually get methods from cognitive psychology which can give you some experimental basis for what theoreticians have been talking about.
That's an area that a lot of my friends that did language, did a language, English at university, said that they very much enjoyed from their studies of linguistics, which obviously they would have had to done as part of their course, that the psycholinguistics is always the one they say, oh yes, I really enjoyed that one.
Well, the thing with psycholinguistics is essentially that you have very, it's a fascinating area. The good thing about it is that it's really accessible. If you're doing theoretical linguistics, essentially, you have to deal with very abstract ways of representing knowledge, let's say, which is not something that you can easily get your head around to. But when you're dealing with psycholinguistics, you're asking very basic questions, such as, you know, when I'm processing, when I'm reading a text, how can I understand what it's talking about? So we know, for example, that, you know, the eye goes ahead of your conscious, you know, processing in a way. So your eye is always ahead of you when you're reading text and stuff like that. And because it gives you all these sort little bits and pieces of accessible information, it gives you the impression that you understand even more. But at the end of the day, even psycholinguistics, even though it definitely helps shape the, you know, core theoretical points, it's there as a sort of add-on to the basic, to the fundamental intuitions you have about how language works at the end of the day. And then, yeah, apart from that, I mean, obviously you have many other areas. You have second language acquisition, which is essentially, and teaching even more so. So these are called areas of applied linguistics. So you can look at language from an anthropological perspective, from a social perspective. You can look at how, you know, children can be taught another language or their first language in a more efficient way. You have other areas like translation and things which are of obvious relevance, and even studies of bilingualism, which would be, you know, a main thing in the island here. And then you have other areas such as computational linguistics, which is the application of, you know, formalisms that have to do with language on computer applications and software. I mean, yeah, it's all these
in fact, that is a particularly interesting area that we are developing here, and I hope that perhaps we'll find time at the end of this chat to talk a little bit about that.
I'd love that.
Perhaps at this point I can turn, since you've mentioned second language teaching, perhaps I can turn to our guest from Seville and ask you, Dr. Padilla Cruz, what is your particular interest in second language teaching? Why does it fascinate you? Why have you made it so much part of your research?
My real interest is pragmatics, which is one of the daughter disciplines of linguistics, right? Pragmatics has to do with the way we use language and the way we understand language, right? This is the social factors that intervene in language production and the cognitive factors and cognitive issues that that intervene in language comprehension. But the thing is that pragmatics has many applications and implications to different areas of linguistics, and one of those areas is second language teaching and second language acquisition, right? As regards second language teaching, now, these days, nobody would probably deny that to learn a second language is essential, above all in Europe, in a continent, in a system that has no borderlines, in which there is great mobility and so on. But the problem is that the problem is precisely the way we learn a second language. Over decades and decades, people have been used to teaching second languages, but in a very traditional way, right? We've been, or many teachers and many instructors have been focusing on what we say, what we call the abstract system, the linguistic system, right? The vocabulary, the phonology, and syntax, right? I remember
how I learned
that.
French and never really managed, actually, I have to admit.
And, you know, that's the way I started to learn English, right? Because I'm not a native speaker of English. But the thing is, the truth is that when it comes to speaking the language, we, as non-native speakers, we face many difficulties, we have many problems, and many misunderstandings arise. We don't know how to behave in linguistic terms with the second language, right? So I think that pragmatics over the last decades, from the 1980s onwards, right, has had many implications and applications to second language teachings, and it had made it possible to go from a more traditional approach to teaching a second language, a more traditional approach based on syntax, phonology, vocabulary, and those kind of things, to a more practical conception of the second language, right? Pragmatics has looked into, you know, those different sociocultural factors affecting language production, how we or how native speakers behave, how they use the language. You know, it's commonsensical to say that, for instance, we don't greet each other in the same way. Well, Spanish speakers don't greet each other in the same way as, I don't know, British speakers do, right? Or that we don't apologize in the same way. That we perceive things in different ways, because there is a very important thing, which is culture, right? Culture affects and conditions everything, every aspect of human behavior. And obviously, it affects and conditions language, right? So pragmatics, on the one hand, has focused on this socio-cultural aspects, right? And as a consequence, when applied to second language teaching and second language acquisition, it has tried to see which sociocultural factors students or learners of a second language should be aware of and should take into account when behaving, when using the second language. On the other hand, you know, there are cognitive issues, right? Cognitive issues which affect interpretation, understanding, how we come to a particular conclusion, how we come to a particular interpretation of an utterance. Why, it is calling here, why I get, I should switch the aircon on, or sorry, I should switch the aircon off, right? Why? Because that is not encoded in the language, right? That is something that we get through inferences, right? So pragmatics looks into these two or what, among many other aspects. It looks into these two areas, the sociocultural factors affecting language, language production, and the cognitive factors that affect understanding utterances. Right, so as a consequence, it can have, you know, many implications in order to understand how we should behave, or in order to be familiar, to be acquainted with potential consequences of our behavior in a second language when we have to use a language which is not our native language.
I can understand how your reference to inference works when two people are talking in a language that they know, in a culture that they know. It's a bit more difficult to imagine how that might help if I'm actually out of that culture. How I have to learn those inferences, don't I?
You don't have to learn inferences, right? You don't have to learn inferences because inferences are something which are subconscious and are something which are instantaneous, and you know they take place without us noticing them, right? But the thing is that you have to be aware of of something which is very simple. Inferences are carried out, are performed on the basis of knowledge, right? On the basis of different kinds of knowledge, cultural knowledge, make sense schemata, different frames, different mental frames about reality, the activities you do, and everything. So you have to be aware of, how knowing things affects interpretation, right? And in many cases, the problems you may have when understanding a second language or when understanding things said in a second language, those problems stem from, knowledge deficits, right? You're not familiar with cultural knowledge, you're not familiar with cultural conventions, you're not familiar with some conventions of usage of the language, right? You might not know that, for instance, when inviting someone in a particular culture, the convention is for you to issue the invitation and for the other person either to accept or to reject the invitation. But in another culture, you have to insist, for instance, like 20 times or something like that. And then there is like a game of yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and so on. Right? That is knowledge, right? That is knowledge. And, you know, if you don't have that knowledge, you can misunderstand the other person, right? Because, you operate on a basis of, your own knowledge, right? Your knowledge of your first language, your knowledge of your own culture, and so on. So you need to acquire knowledge. You need to be exposed to different situations and so on. If you really need to develop that capacity of making the right inferences, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm going to give a bad example. Tell me if I'm wrong. One thing I found very difficult as an English native speaker learning Italian, for example. In English, you don't have a formal lei.
Yes.
Even
yes.
Plural.
Yes.
You. Whereas in Italy, of course, it's much more complicated than that. You have the tu, the lei, the vo. In the old days, the voi and the loro, which is going out a bit of fashion now. But it took me a long time to be able to take that on board, because it was totally not within my cultural knowledge. I mean, would that be a good example of what you're saying? Or?
Yes, that would be a good example related to the sociocultural side of pragmatics, right? You know, for instance, pragmatics, when we apply it to second language teaching, what we would do with this kind of thing is to say, well, listen, in a language such as Italian, French, Spanish, which are the Romance languages which distinguish this kind of things, this kind of deferential personal pronouns, when do we use this? And what are the effects that we can achieve when using these pronouns? So we explain, first of all, the factors governing the usage of these pronouns. For instance, in the case of Italian, that you want to show respect, you want to show that you don't know your hearer, that probably your hearer is in a higher position than you are, probably that, you know, he is more powerful than you, he's richer, I don't know. Right? Then we explain the sociocultural factors, then we move to you know, different contexts when you use it, right? Different situational contexts. For instance, if you don't know this interlocutor and you happen to be in a very formal situation, in an official reception or something like that, you're supposed and you're expected to behave in this way, to address your interlocutor with this kind of pronouns. Then we move to the effects, right? So if you do this, if you use this, your interlocutor will perceive that you are being respectful, that you are following conventions and so on, and therefore no misunderstanding, no undecided interpretation, right? No undecided interpretation, and no, your interlocutor will not end up believing that you are rude, that you are impolite, that you consider him to be inferior or to be, I don't know, a classmate, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in many cases, for instance, I use a very radical example in which I say, would you ask? Imagine you had to ask for a beer, right? Would you ask for a beer? Would you ask the king of Spain for a beer in the same way as you would do? As you would ask for a beer to one of your classmates? And I try to make them reflect on, well, listen, the king of Spain is the king of Spain. He is the chief of state, and he deserves respect and so on. I wouldn't even probably ask for a beer to the king of Spain.
Right? Can't imagine doing that.
Yes, but this is the kind of things. You have to make them aware that there are many factors intervening in utterance production and in using a second language, and that they should be aware of them, right? They should be aware of them. And this is something that very regrettably hasn't been done over decades, right? Because, as I said before, teaching a language was teaching syntax, yeah, vocabulary, and so on.
In fact, I can always tell somebody who has learned Italian in Italy from somebody who's learned Italian outside Italy.
Of course.
Because that you can just, the nuances are sometimes just missing.
Yeah.
Stavros, have you learned Maltese?
Not yet, but I'm working on it.
I've learned
my first like 10 words, but I've been here for 4 months only. So
not bad. Well, I've been here for a lot longer than that, I'm all right for the reading and the understanding, but the speaking is a bit.
That's of a problem. The intonation is what gets me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway,
perhaps we can go back a bit to the institute,
sure,
and talk about some of the institute's work, because the many listeners won't really be aware about,
sure,
the Institute of Linguistics. And I know you've got some exciting things
going on. Yes.
And as we were saying before, there's this link up with IT, so this lovely mix of disciplines, really.
Yes. So let me start from... Well, the Institute of Linguistics has been founded... Well, it has been going on for at least, I don't know, 30 years or something like that. We are mainly, we're also servicing, we have our own bachelor, which is has been linguistics for a while now, and we're servicing other departments as well, such as Maltese, English, Italian, for linguistics courses. The thing is that, well, first of all, I'm here now, so I'm dealing with these sort of inferential pragmatics things that Manuel has been talking about, and it's really exciting because I see that there's a lot of interest in that, and the very big news that we have is that we have a new course. It's actually started this year, and we didn't expect it to be as popular as it is, but you know, we're hoping for even more students next year, and it's a course on human language technology, which sort of links IT to linguistics. And to give you a very simple and easy example, I mean, I'm pretty sure that you're familiar with Google Translate or you know, with a new iPhone app, which is called Siri. And it's actually, you can talk to it and it can respond and it can give you directions. I mean, vocally.
I haven't got that one on my iPhone.
Oh, right. Yeah, you should. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you should look it up. I mean, it's really handy and everything. But the thing is that you can use all this knowledge that you have as a linguist and in conjunction with programming knowledge as well. And you can actually build up applications that will be able to recognize voice or would be able, you know, to translate things on their own automatically. And all these very cool, actually, applications that you get. We've got a bachelor for people who are interested in it. And it's actually, the good thing about it is that it's a very open course. So people from both the humanities and with a humanities background or A-levels or something like that, and an IT background can go, can come and join, and then they will get an interdisciplinary view. Another thing which is actually, which hasn't been advertised, I mean, it's not easy to see from a first look, is that from this course you actually get both a hardcore linguistic course at units, you know, you get the knowledge that you would be required to have as a linguist and the IT familiarity that you would have to have as a computational linguist. So it sort of opens up new exciting directions, both for us as researchers and essentially for the students in terms of getting a job in the market afterwards. Other than that, I mean, it's actually been a very, I mean, I'm new here as well. I was hired for this new course, to be honest. And it's a really exciting start because it's not, one of the exciting things about it is that there are like four or five other courses like this throughout Europe. So it's really a new area.
Cutting edge.
Yes. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. Nobody finishing the course will be able to develop Siri itself. Like, you know, the whole program, but at least, you know, you get the info. Yeah, yeah. And the good thing is, again, that you don't just get the computational side of things. You actually get into cognitive science per se and linguistics and understand how these two are related. And which is, I think, a very neat way of, yeah.
Absolutely beautiful, beautiful area. Yeah. Dr. Padilla Cruz, was this your first visit to Malta, or you're familiar with the island?
Well, I came here like 3-4 years ago for the first time. I was on holiday and I came here for a week. Mm-hmm. I did most of the sites. I went to Gozo and to Camino, and I enjoyed it quite a lot.
But now we've set you to work.
Yes. Now it's time to work.
Well, we've come to the end of our time. Yep. Thank you both very much indeed for being with us on University Matters, Dr. Padilla Cruz and Dr. Asim Makopoulos.
Thank you very
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġjub li l-kom bixxew għattajba ta' Farsons Foundation.